Welcome to The Art of Construction, the podcast dedicated to helping you grow your business. Together, we'll explore the world of construction with some of the best minds of the industry. Your host, Evan Tilley, a micro-influencer and sometimes disruptor, will take you on a journey that will lead your business to the next level.
Art of Construction Tribe, I am live in the studio. We have cameras on us. We have mics on us. It's like I'm learning how to talk all over again here. We're coming out of COVID. We're social distanced. I'm looking at a bottle of bourbon, and we are going to have fun today with Mr. Shane Hofer, who I reached out to him on the LinkedIn message board because this guy's in Denver, Colorado, doing all kinds of cool stuff. And we're going to be talking about here in Studio Art of Construction about the main message is he grew up in the industry, and I'm honored when we get leaders of the tribe to get to come in here and talk through life lessons of growing up in the business and taking over the art of forest products, right?
There you go.
And so the other thing is that Shane is a passionate leader, and we want to peel back the layers and talk through what he has going with his platform. So Shane, let's get this baby going. What's your story and led you to being the CEO for Rocky Mountain Forest Products here in Denver, Colorado?
So yeah, my dad started Rocky Mountain Forest Products in 1974. I was born in 78, so it's existed my whole life. And when I grew up, all sights were on becoming an airline pilot. That was what I thought sounded like a cool, interesting career. And my dad used to tease me. He's like, "You don't want to take over the family business?" And you know, as a kid, lumber, building materials, it doesn't sound near as fun as being an airline pilot. And he would tease me and he would say, "You are ripping out my heart vein by vein, artery by artery, by not wanting to take over this business." I ignored the hard time he gave me, and I started to go to college down at Metro. They have a great aviation program here in Colorado, but I was working for him while I was going to college. And it was while I was going to college that I developed my passion for business. And I realized that it had less to do. It wasn't the building materials industry per se or the lumber that sucked me in. It was the game of business. It was the strategy. And that's what kind of drew me in. And over the course of my college career, I decided to switch my major and go away from aviation and actually take over the family business. And so here, 27 years later, I'm as deep in the construction industry as I could possibly be at age 43 and rolling right along.
Awesome. And I've felt your passion. That's why I wanted to go right into hearing your story. They call me the Tasmanian Devon, and I think we're going to connect here and we're going to have a fun happy hour with our teams after this, because there's just so much passion for this industry when you really know where it's at and how many things are broken. But let's get to know a little bit more about Shane. What's your favorite beverage?
So I obviously brought a bottle of bourbon. So bourbon's pretty high on the list, but you can't say that without sounding like a total lush. So, I probably will have to switch that. My latest favorite beverage is lime flavored bubbly. It goes with bourbon. It tastes great on its own and there's no sugar. So that would be, and everyone else that I've listened to on the Art of Construction seems to say iced tea. So I couldn't say that. I had to come up with something more interesting than that.
It's been a lot of iced teas and waters. It's like chocolate milk. I was like, it's funny what people say. Yeah, right. What's a favorite place you've traveled?
So I've been all over the world. I've given this question a lot of thought. I think I have to say Japan right now, because out of all the places I've been, I would love to go back to Japan. It's just an enigma of a society that's got so many layers. Talk about peeling back layers of an onion. Japan's got some layers, and I feel like you could explore that place for a long time and not run out of layers to peel.
All right. Give me one story from your trip to Japan.
Okay, it's the first one that comes to mind. So we were walking around as my wife and my two boys, teenage boys, and we're in Shibuya, which has the world's busiest intersection. If you ever Google that on YouTube or whatever, the number of people that cross this intersection every time the light changes is just insane. And so we're just exploring it. Part of the fun is you just get into these neighborhoods and you explore. And I'm not a big seafood guy, but I wanted to try local food. So I'm like, I just want to find some good noodles, some good like Japanese noodles, and I'm looking for a good noodle shop, and we're wandering around and I find this noodle place. I'm like, oh perfect, look, this place is called, it's like the House of Ramen or something. I'm like, we got to come back here, this place looks great, it's right next to, oh, and we were right on the borderline of the red light district, and it was right next to a brothel. And I was like, all right kids, life lesson.
That's great. Well, what's your favorite hobby or interest outside the construction silos we're going to talk about today and talk about how we break down. We're going to really elevate the trades that we call the warriors here on the Art of Construction. But what do you do outside of that?
I still have a passion for aviation. I still love commercial aviation. I actually like following the battle of Airbus versus Boeing. It is like such a good business study of like it's essentially an industry where there's only two competitors, and to see how they combat one another and follow that, it mixes my passions of business and aviation together. So aviation would be my answer for that.
That's the first aviation as the passion we've ever heard, but there we keep hearing them. So, well, let's get into it. So we've been researching. It sounds like we could possibly spend the whole podcast talking about your life story. You gave the short version of you grew up in the business, but correct me if I'm wrong, you stepped away from it or challenged it. Like, so what's the short version outside of just, it was my dad's company that I took over?
You know, it started as a way to make money. He offered me an opportunity to clean the offices on the weekend when I was in my early teens. And $50 a week for a 14-year-old in the 90s was not too bad, right? I was going to school for aviation. I was taking flying lessons. I was doing all of that stuff. But I was also getting my feet wet in sales as I was getting to college. So it was front counter sales. And then one of the things that Dad did, and it was the greatest and worst thing that he did for me, is he started up a fence company once again. That's how he started. It was actually Rocky Mountain Fence Company. And so he had sold that off. And then years later, he's like, if you really want to learn the fundamentals of business, run a fence installation company. So we turned an old delivery truck into a fence truck, and I had to run set crews and finish crews and do in-home estimates and just setting up a computer at people's dining room tables, have dogs peeing on my computer bag in backyards, and just everything that comes along with doing in-home estimates in the world of home improvement.
So he set this up for you, or you asked to do it?
He set it up for me. He was like, if you really want to learn fundamentals. So this is about the time I'm like, Dad, I don't know. Maybe I don't want to do aviation. Maybe I do want to take over the business.
So he's like, I'm going to really test
it. And he's like, oh, you do you? Yeah. And like, all right, well, then we're going to put you, he's like, you're going to cut your teeth the same way I did. You're going to learn how to do in-home fence sales. And so I'm talking like I'm 19, 20, 21 years old. And I look back now and it really wasn't that stressful. But at the time, in the mind of a 19-year-old, it was so daunting to have to manage labor and crews and making sure that they were always there. You had enough work for them and homeowner expectations and, you know, what they wanted and what was going to make them happy. I mean, it was the greatest trial by fire he could have set up for me.
That's fascinating. And I love looking back to look forward, right? So when and where did you know that you wanted to take over the family business?
It was a conversation he had had probably when he was still, like, it was before I'd really bought in, but it was the first time that really captured my imagination. I was going to school for aviation still. And he's like, if you look at how far I've taken this company and I started from zero, if you think about, if you pick up where I leave off, where could you take it? And how, you can't argue with that logic. You know, you're like, that's got some weight to it. And if I don't have to start from zero, like so many other entrepreneurs out there, but I can build off the momentum that he created from a life's worth of work, that seemed like a pretty good opportunity that I shouldn't pass up, especially as I was learning sales skills and seeing how I loved the strategy of it, positioning yourself in the marketplace. How do you give yourself a competitive advantage? How do you provide good value to the customer? I liked all of those things. And I was like, "This, I think I need to do this. I think this is going to provide a great, interesting life."
So tell us a little bit more about what makes Rocky Mountain Forest Products unique here in Denver, Colorado, and what it's all about.
So we're different from other building material suppliers. I say building materials now because we're not just lumber. We also do granite and marble and countertop material. But if we just simplify it down to lumber, we're different from most lumber yards in that we don't do studs and plywood and OSB. We do specialty products. So we focus on stuff for fences, decks, siding, timbers and beams. And we went after those items for two reasons. One, not there were very few people at the time that were focusing on those. And two, they were higher margin. So it just made for an easier business to run in theory. What also differentiated us is my dad worked very, very hard in the 70s and 80s to develop relationships at the mill level. He was looking to buy directly from manufacturers whenever and wherever possible. And that was with one main objective. That should give us some extra margin to play with that would allow us to be slightly more profitable, and we could pass that savings on to the end user. So it was kind of a win-win for everybody. So go in the space where not everybody is, the specialty products, help them save some money, and it should be a solid business model.
Makes sense. So here's where I was just so stoked to have you in the studio, Art of Construction. And a lot of stuff Art of Construction is working on. This is where I think we align, and I'm really excited for the journey ahead, right? So on social media, that's where we're trying to cater to the next superstars in our industry and trying to make this whole thing sexy and awesome that it is. You and I both know it and feel it, and that's our job now to figure that out. So on social, you have a big passion for blue-collar warriors. Can you talk to us about that?
Absolutely. So, you know, we do, I see so many blue-collar warriors on a daily basis. We do business with over 4,000 unique contractors every year. We see a lot of them coming through. From the new generation to guys that have been in this industry longer than my family has. And I see I have watched their plight over time and how hard they work. And some of them succeed and some of them don't. And some of them evolved with the times, some of them haven't, not as well. And so I think it raises lots of interesting conversations to be had within our industry. I mean, everything from how, because college is being pushed as like the only solution for anyone coming out of high school, we have a real shortage in the skilled trades. Yet our entire society relies on those skilled trades to build the infrastructure of everything. I mean, what I love about our industry, like, what are the three basics of humanity? We need clothing, we need shelter, and we need food. Well, we're servicing the shelter need at its most basic core, the materials that go into shelter, yet people aren't developing careers here because they're told they need to go to college. I mean, obviously there are college degrees for architecture and stuff like that that relate, but those skilled trades, they are often overlooked. And so then that raises a secondary question and a secondary issue that I have a big passion for, and I feel like I would like to become a voice to help these guys, is there's so many people that are tradesmen, there are skilled craftsmen, but they're not very good business people. They're great at working with their hands. They're great at building things. But when it comes to the nuts and bolts of running a business and managing cash flow and understanding market positioning and how to do sales and marketing and everything that a small business needs, a lot of these guys really, really struggle. And I don't feel like they have a very relatable voice out there. If you go to the business books in the bookstore, you listen to what's online, there's a lot of good resources, but nothing's speaking to a world they can relate to. Nothing is speaking to the world of the blue-collar guy that's going into someone's house, listening to what project they want done, and figuring out how to sell it, and then come back the next week with the crew and build it and install it and manage the cash flow to pay my supplier and my guys and make sure I got enough in the pipeline to have a job for the week thereafter. It's an interesting conundrum that a lot of other industries and sales gurus don't speak to.
And then they try to, and they come into the space, and it's just a mess, right?
Yes.
Because they're out there mastering the craft. Like, and when you really get into the mind of the Art of Construction warrior, it's fascinating. And I've tried to do it, right? Like, I've tried to get into their, and I just screw it all up. You know, I own a window and door company, and they say, Devin, get out of here. Go back and run this business. Do what you do. Because I don't have the attention to detail in that. And that's really what I think our calling is to, we have to elevate what they do, because the people that do it love it and are great at it. There's just not enough of them, right?
Correct.
And so what are you doing? And tell us more. I've been following, and it's really cool, this Blue Collar Blueprint show. Tell the tribe what that's all about.
So Blue Collar Blueprint is a vlog that's supposed to show behind the scenes of what we're doing at Rocky Mountain Forest Products. Part of what I think we're doing that makes us special is we create a really empathetic, people-first culture that has allowed young people to thrive at Rocky Mountain Forest Products. And that's one of the complaints I often hear from some of the blue-collar warriors, the difficulty of integrating millennials and even younger generations into the workforce. I think we've done that very, very successfully. 85% of all of our employees are under the age of 30. And we're growing at the rate we are with their help. And so Blue Collar Blueprint is supposed to be a peek into our world of how we run things and how we run with empathy, how we lead with empathy and run things accordingly. So that was kind of our first, what's the word I'm looking for, toe in the water, so to speak, of kind of revealing what we do to the world just to see if it's of any value to anyone. Because I really want to see this industry grow and thrive and see, I want to see it evolve from a place where contractors and home improvement is seen as a headache in the eyes of the homeowner, you know, where they don't know whether the guy sitting across from them is trustworthy or not. You and I both know a lot of them are, but those handful of those guys out there that do things in a shady manner, they put a black cloud over everybody. Sure. Yeah. And so I just want to, start a conversation. Like, let's up our ethics. Let's lead more compassionately. Let's have more empathy with our employees, and the homeowner is going to feel that. It's going to be a better experience for everyone involved.
So let's give an example on that. So you talk about your pillars to success. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. So this was actually, like, people, as we were birthing the idea of Blue Collar Blueprint, they're like, you're going to need a framework for all this. I'm like, okay, I've never tried to put my entire work philosophy into a framework. It's like, well, you better get busy. And so,
well, whoever coached you that was smart, right? Because that's our job, is we have to put it into something people can understand. Because if we're just all passion with no systems behind that, it's hard for people to get and be behind the movements that we're creating. So what are the pillars to success for Mr.
So Shaker? I'm gonna jump on six of the main ones that are the easiest. First one is either your attitude or your mindset. It all starts up in our head and how we view the world. Are we looking at it, the glass half empty or the glass half full? I mean, that's an oversimplification of things, but it starts there. If we don't have our mind right and knowing where we're going to go, everything else is going to fall apart. Authenticity and ethics. The way my dad defined what is right in business is differently than the way I do, and probably differently than the next generation is going to define things. That needed to evolve. And I've spoke multiple times in some of our videos, like, my dad watched every penny like a hawk, to the point that it made customers feel like he was trying to do them wrong sometimes with how stringent he would run some of his policies or whatnot. And employees felt undervalued because, you know, if you're a commissioned sales guy and the house takes a hit, you take a hit too. And the guy, you know, the sales guy is sitting there saying, I didn't have nothing to do with this. My dad's thought process was well-intended. You know, his thought was, if we run out of money, they're not going to have a job anyway. This is my way I take care of the employee. But it often left employees and customers feeling undervalued and underappreciated. And as I sat back in my early 20s and watched kind of from the sidelines, I saw both sides. I saw where my dad was coming from. I saw where the employees and the customers were coming from. And it
because
helped me.
He's not wrong if you run out of money.
100%.
This is an important thing that we got a baseline is if there's 100%. Not cash in the bank, you can't do payroll. So he's right, but it's.
And,
now
and
it's a
his
mindset.
Philosophy kept it alive for decades, right? So I can't argue with that. I mean, he ran a successful business. But it gave me inspiration. Can we run this in a similar way where people aren't left feeling slighted or rubbed in the wrong way?
Sure.
While still watching that bottom line, let's do it in a way that's slightly softer, maybe, is a way to put it. So that led to the authenticity and ethics, which also is my people first pillar. You know, like, we got to put people first, and that's not just employees, that's customers. And it started for me, like, if I treat the employees really, really well and they feel valued, they're going to pass that on to the customers. You know, like, we treat people the way that we are treated, and we should treat people the way we want to be treated, and it's a trickle-down effect. I'm also a big believer in trusting your gut. You know, my dad so many times would create black and white rules, even though his gut would sometimes say he shouldn't follow it in this situation. I made a black and white rule, so I'm going to follow this. And the gut was the right situation. And so I've learned, we all have to learn to trust our gut. And so part of what I've taught our managers is, how do we really listen to our gut? How do we know that's not emotion that's running it, that's making me say I should do this or that? So I've spent a lot of time trying to study intuition and how does that work? Why sometimes we get those intuitive feelings that are just spot on, and other times we seem like we were so far off? And it really comes down to, are we clear and present? Are we in the moment? Can we get our emotion out of it and just listen before we actually start thinking? So I'm a big believer in that. And I feel like we've successfully got that into our culture now. Our management works on that. I've tried to take as many black and white rules out of everything as possible. See, we don't live in a black and white world. We live in a world of gray, shades of gray. So the more we can learn to navigate that, the more we're gonna succeed.
Yeah, I love that. And my window and door company is, there's some exciting stuff in the works, and it's, you have to really have your attitude right, but then you gotta check each other and be open and honest with each other and be able to have each other's back as warriors when you go into battle. And what I mean by that is that if you're not feeling or you're rubbed the wrong way, damn it, tribe, talk about it. And come into it to say, I'm pissed off about this, and tell them your emotion so you can get it out and get your attitude right again. And if you don't do that, then it just spirals and it becomes cancerous. And I think that's what this is really, if I'm understanding right, this is kind of the core values, but your pillars to success, you're really thinking through that for your blue collar warriors and the people following what you're doing on your vlog and stuff, is to be relatable. That's what I'm picking up from you.
I couldn't have said it better myself. Yeah, I agree 100%. Like, I'm not perfect. None of us are perfect. We're going to piss each other off. We're going to get things wrong. Let's talk about it, and let's have enough humility to realize, hey, man, it's okay. I'm sorry. I messed this one up. Let's go back and let's fix this.
Yeah, stay tuned. There's a podcast coming up where I'm going to challenge a new warrior, a leader's coming in, and I'm going to challenge about how we pissed each other off. And that's going to be one of our first podcasts. And by hitting it head on, we just broke through the ceiling. And that builds real trust. And real trust is earned, not given. And that's the part when you look at, when you say we do other stuff, when you do other stuff, you have a group of warriors that has each other back to be successful. And if you don't, it doesn't work, right?
100%. That's the people aspect. Like, we have to be surrounded by great people, not just in our company, but our customers and everyone that we work with. Because it's, especially in construction more than anything, like, we're not just selling a product and poof, it's gone and done. I mean, like, it's part of a bigger project that involves so many other people. If you put a bad product out there or you're installing something poorly, you're going to piss off a bunch of people that are unrelated to you, but that would spread, you know, like, everyone would know. Like, we're in this thing together. So we got to work together as a team, communicate our way through it. I don't think previous generations did that really, really well.
And it's not if, it's when there's issues. And as the leader of the tribe, I'm only as good as the tribe, right? So when I screw up the recording or do a bad video, or if I do this, other people have to help pick that up. Same with my window and door company. When there's problems, you better have someone that, even if they don't know the answer, and they're not going to fake it till they make it, they go do the research. And that's where we're at. So to close the loop on this, we could go all day about this, but just what, say the pillars of to success one more time so they can just think about it, and then we'll move on from that.
Attitude and mindset, number one. Second, I'm actually calling now, it's a scale of emotion. Understanding where everyone's at emotionally, it changes the way you interact with them. Doing everything from a place of authenticity, ethically, having a people-first approach, trust your gut, live in the moment, and empower your people.
Awesome. And to piggyback with that, I come from the school of philosophy of 3 to 7 less is more. And that comes from the U.S. where I've been practiced. And so pillars to success, core values, what this is the words to live by, right? So for us, everything we do is all about doing the right thing. And you could put a lot of that stuff, but you have to put constant pressure and talk and conversation about always doing the right thing. For us, it's problem solving, and have a whole thing about how we do problem solving. But you always have to do a little T before you get shit done. So everything around my whole company is little T with a lot of GSD. So do it thoughtfully, get stuff done, but always do it with a commitment to excellence. And if you're a leader listening to this on the Art of Construction Tribe, you better figure that out and be able to talk about it like Shane and I just did as leaders. So if you want to be a leader and lead the warriors, you better be able to talk the talk. So to be able to talk the talk, you have to be able to talk about doing business and it shouldn't suck. And so that was a social media that, you know, you have to have fun with it, right? So if you're not having fun, you're either doing it wrong or in the wrong game, in my opinion. And I raise my hand and say, I've been in this business my whole career. And there's times it wasn't fun. There was jobs I have that weren't fun. And that boils down to the right person in the right seat and doing what is fun for you. So what's your take on, if it's not fun, you shouldn't do it?
I see so many people, particularly young people, that try a new job, they succeed for a while, performance slips. I always want to come and talk to that guy. And 99% of the time when I talk to that guy, they're in the wrong job and they're not really enjoying it. They can do the job and they might be successful at it, but they're not enjoying the job. And when people don't enjoy the job, I'm actually going to be putting out a video here soon about should you ever talk your people into quitting? And it's a matter of if you're not enjoying the job, dude, life's too short. Go do something that you enjoy. We're not all cut out for every job just because we can all do them. A great example for me is like frontline sales. Like I can do in-home sales. I don't enjoy in-home sales. I don't thrive off of that. We have guys that do. They live it. They breathe it. They love everything about it. So if you're in a job that you don't wake up and more often than not, you can't wait to get to the office, you're probably in the wrong job. And ultimately, that's going to hold you back from your earning potential too. Most people stick into it because they think that, I'm making good money. No, you don't do something you dislike and make good money. Those two don't go hand in hand. You're never truly going to succeed until you find something that you love. So yeah, I threw that post up when I was down at 10X Growth Con, and I'm like, I'm on a business trip, and I ended up somehow in a private club watching 50 Cent perform, and I'm with some of my colleagues, and we're having the time of our life. I'm like, this is pretty cool. And if you're not having these types of experiences in your job, maybe you're in the wrong job. But at the very least, I hope you wake up and you're like, I can't wait to go to work today. More often than not. Like you said, we all have moments where you're like, this isn't fun. But that's just life. That's the human experience.
Well said. So the Art of Construction, we're all about breaking down the construction silos that we passionately call the Art of Construction. And I went out and started this thing going on 6 years ago. And it was really all about a place for all of the different segments to come together, right? And whenever someone else is involved in other things, especially podcasts, we have to bring that to light, and we'll put all this stuff in the show notes to go check it out. But tell us about the Mill podcast that you're involved in.
So the Mill is the brainchild of our marketing director, Taylor Poole. And his thought was very similar to yours, except it has a slightly different feel. Dare I say, a less professional feel than yours. You are a consummate professional, Dan.
Oh, thank you.
Taylor just wanted to start having very informal conversations with people somehow related to the construction industry. Some of them distantly related. We've had a few mining companies and oil companies on. But just getting different perspectives, talking to people. Similar to the Art of Construction, like I said, but not nearly as formal. And I think it just creates a broader, less focused conversation that's more of a round table at times, which sometimes is a pro and sometimes is a con.
Sure, and all the above have their ups and downs, right? First 50 episodes, I got a lot of coaching myself, and with one of my core values being a commitment to excellence, they're like, well, you say this in the first 50, you're kind of winging it. It was a fireside chat with no purpose or a plan. And Tribe, like, we want to be the place that everything we do has a commitment to excellence, right? Just like where you're taking all of your platforms, right? So we'll put links in the show notes, but tell us all about your platform of website, shanehofer.com. What do you got going with that, and how can people best get in contact with you?
They can best get in contact with me through shanehofer.com or pretty much any social media at shanehofer. And what I've got going on there, my passion, like I said, is to help other people within this industry. Particularly, I've gotten some interesting feedback of small contractors that are interested in trying to get better at business. I'm not a business guru, but I have helped my family business. I've been along the road as we've grown from $4 million a year in revenue to over $50 million a year in revenue. And if I can help them get better for wherever they're at, I would love to do so. I'm doing that through, we're doing some mastermind events that we call Beyond the Forest, kind of a look behind what we do, even in more in depth. We have our weekly Blue Collar Blueprint episodes that go up that show an informal view behind the scenes. I can do one-on-one mentoring, and I'm also going to be launching here shortly a the name has not been official yet, but like an inner circle call where once a week anyone we can get on and talk about things. I'll present usually a topic, and ideally we're going to get a big conversation going with people from all through this industry. I've talked to people at manufacturing levels to contractor levels and everywhere in between. Certain people want to discuss how to fine-tune leadership training within our industry, but they didn't know really where to bounce these ideas off of. I want to just start a conversation. Let's get more and more people talking like you and I are now. There's some great minds in this industry, but we tend to live in our own individual little silos. Yeah. And so how that conversation births, I don't know what's going to gain the most traction. I'm throwing a bunch of things out through the website, shanehofer.com. And I'm going to go where we start getting a bunch of attention and where we get some traction, because I just want to see our industry evolve and get better and get this community and the talking more. Like when my dad started this, you know, it wasn't like hate your competition, but you certainly weren't going to be friends with him and you weren't going to go have a happy hour with him. And I ended up with one of our arch rivals, quote unquote, having dinner sitting next to the Deck Superstore in Las Vegas one time because we had a common manufacturer take us out. Steve was great. We had a great time together. We had a nice meal together. We commiserated on some things. You know, we didn't walk away best friends. We don't talk on a regular basis, but we don't have to be enemies either. And we can figure out a way. There's plenty of business to go around. Let's just start talking. Let's make our industry better.
Sure. Well, and kudos to the Art of Construction team for reaching out to you. Say we're both here in Denver. I find it funny is like I'll meet like-minded people, but you have to, like, to go to this other thing or this other thing, and there has to be this reason. I think that's what you're saying is let's make a reason for the season to keep this thing alive with our different platforms, right? So what is the Art of Construction? People always ask, and I've been trying to figure that out and get it down to what it is it's a podcast or a platform for contractors and its affiliates. And its affiliates is a key word that is moving rapidly. And we're going to get to your on the hot seat questions here around this to connect construction materials and technologies to the right handshakes. And that's the key dichotomy, I think, right now, is we have to turn these technologies from video games into real things and be more efficient in what we do. So the question I've been asking everybody, and to close this thing out, is what is your crystal ball for connecting technology and handshakes for the future of the Art of Construction?
I wish I had something really profound to say here, because I knew this question was coming because you ask everybody. But ultimately, I'm trying to use the technology to talk to people face-to-face, because I think that's where the most efficient communication begins.
It's gold. You have to actually go to who is our audience. They're all behind a computer screen. And we have to teach them to say, hey, guess what? It's way more fun to get away from that once in a while and go high five at 50 Cent after we had a bunch of time learning and having fun together after we see the forest through the trees, right?
Yeah.
So what is that one thing, Shane, that you want to leave the Art of Construction tribe to think about? We're so thankful to have influencers like you come into Studio Art of Construction. But what is that one thing you want to have them thinking about for contractors and affiliates to go out there and crush it and grow their business?
What can they be doing to make the entire construction industry better? You know, that's rather than just, I mean, we all have our own little world we're worrying about, the money we're trying to make, the families that we're trying to take care of. But how can we leave this industry better than when we began in it? And I think that's what's going to make this evolve and change the reputation that construction has from this seedy, shady, the home improvement, fly-by-night roofer. Let's get rid of that and let's make this a noble industry again that is forming the backbone of all of society. Every structure, every building you walk into is based on construction and the blue collar warriors that erected that building. What can you do is your part to make this world better?
Man, I couldn't agree more. Thank you so much for coming and sharing us with your story. And we're going to go out and have a happy hour. And if you want to get on the train of Art of Construction globally, Shane Hofer globally, but if you're in Denver, hey, we got some pretty cool platforms that we're growing and having as much fun as possible. So come cheers with us, huh?
Sounds great.
All right, cheers, man.
Thanks for having me.